Hello and welcome to another edition of Up It All Odds, the QPR podcast. Tonight, there is Simon Hall.
Evening, mate. How are we?
I'm okay, thank you, Simon. There is George Sharp. Hello, George.
Evening, Paul. Thanks for having me on again. How are you?
You're more than welcome, George. And of course, founder and now back in the fold regular, the one, the only, well, George, well, Chris Charles, but we had a real sliding doors moment on Saturday, didn't we, son? Literally.
On the train back from Leicester, yeah. Well, the tube.
Yeah. As we're saying our goodbyes to everyone, just for anyone who's interested, Chris decided to get the tube and leave his daughter behind, who was left. Look at him going, that's my father, that is.
Well, I mean, it's slightly economical with the truth there, Paul, but I haven't got the energy to get to explain it.
Did you not get on the tube without your daughter and your friend? Yes.
I thought she was right behind me, and she wasn't. But I saw her at the next stop, as I did you. Okay.
Excellent. Right. I'm going to start with the youngest first because he deserves it. And he's actually the best in the podcast after his 100%. Brilliant interview with Steve Cook on the website last week. Not blowing smoke up your arse, George, but that was amazing. Well done. And yes, Saturday. Don't need any introduction. Far away.
Well, I think it was you look at the stats, right? And you think, oh, Leicester dominated that game. But I think we had the three best chances of the game, didn't we? And it was I think it was good to see because we defended well against a team who, although have been known to overpass, they didn't seem like they were breaking us down much. They had shots from outside the box, that Fatu had a couple of chances. But apart from that, they didn't really pose any threat. And then our goal, I think great movement by Lyndon Dykes, great proper striker's run, good vision from Chris Willock again, similar to Rotherham at home. And then Cher, obviously, easy finish, weren't it? So that was good. And then I was always worried that they were going to come out fighting for the first 15 minutes of the second half. They weren't going to play like that again. But it was good to get a goal sort of around that sort of time. Armstrong with his first touch of the ball. And I think that does show how much of an impact having good subs is. I've been saying that the whole season, but it is good. You can bring someone on and they can score. Once again, similar to Rotherham with Paul Smith. And I think their goal, poor goalkeeping from Begovic. You should never palm it back into danger. But even so, like the luckiness to go in off the inside of the post and go straight back to their man. And then after that, I don't think they had much again. I think it was very, very similar to the start of the first half where they just couldn't break us down. So I think overall, great away performance. So that's my overview.
Well, I don't know about the rest of you, but I think we should just go straight to the
podcast. Yeah, let's go to the Ars End, yeah. You might as well do everyone's Ars End as well, George.
Yeah, why are we here, Chris?
He normally does, to be fair.
Yeah, it's not my choice. I go first.
It's a compliment. I haven't said you had lovely windows, and this is how you repay me. Honestly, God, it's shocking. Anyway,
brilliant, mate.
I'm going to go to Chris now because, Simon, you've upset me, and I'll come back to you.
I mean, of course, I echo everything George has said. And that's, I was going to bring that up as well. It does, you know, to the naked eye, you look at that and it's like, it looks like a smash and grab raid, but it was anything. But there wasn't many times I actually felt we were in trouble, which obviously happened a lot of times this season and the previous seasons. First half, I thought we were completely in control. Second half, it was obviously once they got their goal, it was you couldn't do it the easy way, could we? And just like, you know, we were cruising at 2-0. There had to be a moment. And I think you're right, Begovic did flap at that. It looked like he could have just dealt with that a lot more easily than he did. But yeah, they had a bit of luck as well. And I think we were good value for the win. I really do. I think, you know, okay, maybe you could argue that, you know, given all their shots, that Leicester maybe deserved something. But you've got most of those shots were dribbling across the floor, straight in the keeper's hands. I don't know where you start, really, in terms of the players. It's like, I mean, Jimmy Dunn, I thought, was brilliant. I mean, you know, this is probably going to come back to bite me, but it's no more than 3-4 weeks ago that we were just like corners were as you might as well just give a penalty to the opposition because we were just conceding so badly from them. And it's kind of inspired by the gaffer to bring him in, and since he's been in, Jimmy Dunn has been inspired, and I'm so pleased to see that because we've had him on the pod a few times, and as well as being a good player, he's a lovely, lovely fella. And you know, it's no secret he's been going through, you know, a bit of a tough time. But the whole defence were great. I mean, Jake Clark sort of was like now he's playing at a decent side. He's sort of almost forgetting to be injured, you know, because it's like you know, I don't remember him stringing this many games together without you know going down and you know hobbling off for another 3 or 4 weeks. I thought Parr was excellent again as well. I mean, you could just go through the whole team. That there wasn't, you know, the Begovic Ricket aside, I don't think there was any like anybody you'd say, oh God, that was a terrible error. I just thought it was a great performance. But the biggest thing really was the fans. It was just being in there was an absolute privilege. And you look at the comments, there's been a few been put online by Football Away Days and people like that. All the comments from the Leicester fans, like just saying loudest support we've seen this season, outsung us completely, put our fans to shame, and yeah, it was just great. Everyone in unison. There was no, you know, I know I did hear that our train was delayed because there was some bother between some idiots or other, but generally, I thought it was all done in the right spirit as well. And yeah, and the what turned out to be the winning goal was incredible. You mentioned the subs, George. It's like. That was he came on. I think it was well. What was it? 10 seconds or something, or after he came on, and that just you know that ball's still travelling now. If there hadn't been a net, you know what I mean? That was just absolute venom. And then he scored in 6 seconds, and then took about 6 minutes to celebrate it. But yeah, why not? Why not? Why not? Indeed.
Before I go to Simon, I'm going to have my say because he's annoyed me. So I'm going to make him wait till the Czar's end. Evil eyebrows, people. Now, do you know what I loved about Saturday? And it was good. It was a good atmosphere the whole day. It wasn't. Do you know what I mean? Even though normally with a bigger way support, you're crew, well, you all know what I mean. You're sort of going, oh God, there's too many here. It's going to be one of them days, and they're over. But no one expected anything. As we were sitting in the pub, you know, just saying, if we keep it below two and just play with pride and keep going, it gives us something to build on for the rest of the season. And then once the first goal went in, you're kind of like, ooh, this is interesting. And I didn't, I mean, and I know you could say you blame the keeper and he should be blamed for that. But it's one of them things. But at the same time, is you know, weeks ago that would have destroyed us. Them getting one back like that at that time, if they got another one immediately, which is why it was an absolute pleasure to see what Field was doing in midfield. He was absolutely destroying them, cutting things out. We were moving the ball well, but I have to say, I mean, Armstrong's goal was just. It's a wee bit of me, Simon and Chris and wee George. Wee George looks like he's shaving. Never mind. If he starts shaving, I'm officially old. Never mind. But it shows you what Svensson has done with him, that he's not a headless chicken anymore. He's hanging off the last defender. He's not using up all his energy. He's also calmed him down because that finish was superb. It reminded me of a young Les, to be perfectly honest with you, in the way that he broke through with that. And the way he's playing now is a lot more mature. In the same way we talk about Jimmy Dunn, to me, he was man of the match because he was hanging off people. He was doing everything right. He was not. He knows he hasn't got the pace to go with these people. Because that winger, I think it was him that absolutely tore us to shreds at the Bush. You know, he played him into a cul-de-sac half the time, which I thought was really good. So well done to Jimmy. And, you know, Paul Smith coming on, you know, and then also what he did against Rotherham. From having a bench, we talked about this, Simon, didn't we, ages ago? We looked at the bench when it was going bad and we're like, Jesus, you know, you'd probably pull the physio off and play him at one stage. But now we've got a whole squad that the new lads that came in alone, two of them couldn't get playing. And that's a credit to the rest of the team. And but one thing I will say, and I'm sure we'll cover it later on immensely, that 10 minutes, I mean, that blew me away. It was so good that the ball went out of play for the 10 minutes for Stan. And I think if you didn't have a tear in your eye and a lump in your throat, I don't think you were there. It was just the most incredible thing I've witnessed. And it was so spontaneous. And to be fair to the Leicester fans, a lot of them joined in as well. And I just thought that was amazing. It's what's so special about this club. And, you know, people from George's age, below that, and everyone else know what the legend is, know what Stan's story. They've been on Stan's journey. And you know, as I said, we did a special podcast last night with Martin and Peter and Dave Thomas. We're just saying that, you know, it's almost legendary, but also the folklore and the stories, but he's part of the DNA. And it's so people who would never have seen him, people, even I didn't see him in the flesh, but yeah, that was goosebumps. Simon, carry on.
I can only echo what's been said. And you always have this sort of like once in a time where an away day will probably be talked about for years and years to come. And I suspect that will be one of them. And I just want to take us back to Burnley last season, similar sort of situation. We were fourth, fifth bottom, completely unexpected win, but the nature of the wins couldn't have been any different. Burnley, we could have been about 4 or 5 nil down at half time and had no complaints. Managed to do a proper smash and grab. Not entirely sure how we did it, but great result nonetheless. And I can only echo what was said that, yeah, I genuinely think we deserve that. And yeah, what did they really create? And yeah, shots from 20, 25 yards out. Begovic didn't really need to make a save. I think there was something right towards the end where Field and Clark sort of blocked it. But with the exception of that, there wasn't anything else. And I'm glad that it was picked up with Armstrong and the improvement in discipline of Armstrong, because there was quite, I don't know about you lot, there was quite a lot around me who were moaning that he wasn't going bombing and trying to stop the goalkeeper. And there was me sort of turning around going, look, we actually want him there so we can have 11 people behind the ball. We don't need him bombing around, about all over. So the discipline side on that was absolutely fantastic. I mean, the only gripe I've got about Leicester is, I don't know what it was like for people trying to get into the ground, but I've seen them, I've had less stringent airports. Just going in, having everything searched and so on, and it was just completely and utterly unnecessary. I think it took us about 15 minutes to get in, but if you're going to have that as your main complaint, that indicates the day we had. And I can only echo as well, no one there had a bad game at all. And it was really good to see people staying behind, the Rs are staying up. Virtually everyone stayed behind for a good few minutes to applaud the players off, and they deserved it. Now, where we're going to link with that is, as great as it is winning games, everyone else is winning down the bottom at the same time as well. So I just want to ask this question, really. There's about two from 11 who could go down, and I include Watford in 12th down from that. Where do people think the points cut-off is going to be? Because I've got a view that it may not be as many as you think, because not everyone can go at a point a game. But what's everyone else's thoughts about what you're going to need as a cut-off?
George, you're young, your brain works.
Well, I've always thought 50 points and you're safe in this division. Ooh, okay. So I think as long as you get more than 50, you'll be fine. And I completely agree with you, Simon. These teams will have to start playing each other soon. And like, there's not a chance that everyone continues picking up results as they are. So some of them have been shock results recently as well. So they will start playing each other. And I don't think it'll be as high as you think. I did see a thing though. It's the quickest time that 22nd has reached 38 points in championship history or something like that. So yeah, I can see it being higher than other years, but I don't see it being anything higher than 50 personally.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, just looking at even this week's fixtures coming, you've got Blackburn, who I think they are still in it. Blackburn are playing Millwall. Sheffield Wednesday are playing Plymouth, who have been dragged right back into it. So even just looking down there, and then you've got Cardiff playing Huddersfield to come. And yeah, I think you're right, George. I think, and to be honest, I would at the moment, given our track record, I'd rather not be playing the teams around us, because that seems to be the time when we mess up. It's a ridiculous thing to say, but I almost feel comfortable when we're playing a better team, playing a football inside, because that brings, as I've said many times before, that brings, we go to their level, whereas other times we come down to the level of the team we're playing. But yeah, I did one of these one of these predictor things, you know, where you predict the table, you put in every result that's to come. And I had us, and I did mark, you know, did us come to a couple of losses, but I had us finishing 14th with 53. Now, obviously, I would take that, and I had Sheffield Wednesday. Oh, no, hang on, I can't see that. Sorry, technology, eh? Rubbish. But yeah, I think it was 48 was the cut-off I had.
No.
You know, that was just doing it. I think I had Watford, Blackburn, and someone else to go down. Watford, yeah. Anyway, so I if,
Bold,
believe me, let
bold.
me say, if I could actually see what I was looking at, then that'd
Hang on.
be.
So let me get this right. You've got Watford to make the drop. So that would be Watford, Stoke,
Oh
and
no, I
Rotherham.
haven't. Sorry, I yeah.
Oh.
Just well, it's what the
Malteteller.
screen went dead. It's Rotherham, Plymouth, and Stoke to go down, and Blackburn and Watford just missing out on goal difference.
I can't see Plymouth going down. The home
I
record's
could
too
see
good,
that as
but
well. Yeah,
I'd like to see us. I've been saying Plymouth the whole year. I'm not gonna big myself up, but I think that their squad's just not that great, personally. And I don't think their manager's settled in as well as Steven Schumacher did. So who knows?
Recently.
Plymouth could be one to drop. But one thing you
I know.
did one thing you did say that we've actually got the hardest fixtures, yeah, of the teams around us. But I class that as a good thing because that means that we're going to be playing teams who there's not many in this division this year, but we'll be playing most of the teams who don't have anything to play for. Like you'd like to think at the end of the season that Coventry, they won't make the playoffs this year personally. So you'd like to think they'll be on the beach. Leeds obviously won't be, but I think you can definitely take it as more as a positive than a negative.
Yeah, I mean Middlesbrough are sort of falling off as well, and we've got them obviously on Saturday. I think West, I'm sure we'll come to the late. I think West Brom will be a different proposition, but yeah, no, you're right. I think it is when we play the lesser teams that we tend to drop off.
But I don't think, to be fair, Marty's going to settle for that, judging by what he said about staying humble and focused and everything else and the job that he's doing. I mean, it's funny because even when we were losing, nobody turned against him. And I think we've been vindicated by that because he has made a massive difference to the first 16 games killed us, let's be honest. So, you know, we're always playing catch up. But I mean, listen, I have the brains of an ant's arse. So I'm not going to do predictors and things like that because my brain can't cope. But I would love to see Stoke, Birmingham go down. I just love it. I hate it. Birmingham just annoy me at the moment. Every time they come to the boost, it's like a idiot's day out. I'm stoked because, well, they're quite arrogant, aren't they, when the Premier League for all them years. And just to meet my wee friend Alan and his son Mac, happy would be to see Stoke get relegated so they can go. Because after they beat us, he got left loads of on his desk. They left loads of pictures of burgers because obviously he scored against us. So he's been spending the rest of time going around everyone's desk printing the league table. So he's been enjoying himself. But I'll be absolutely honest with you, if we can stay 19th, I'll be happy with that. That's all I want, and then we can rebuild, resurface next season as a stronger, better. We'll also be a more stripped back version of what we are now, so we can have the squad sorted, the contract sorted, and then we go forward from there. Because I think the foundations are there. We just got to survive this season. And as me and we all said, no one ever thought going down and rebuilding was ever a good idea. You can rebuild in the championship quite well, and financially it'd be a disaster. So anyway, does that kind of answer your question, Simon, or have we not answered it the way you'd like us to?
No, it does, and it matches where I think that I think it's almost statistically impossible that you're going to have seven or eight teams going over a point a game down there. There's bound to be a couple of sides who are going to go at under a point a game, which I think if we want to try and get to 50, particularly with Leicester, you've got 12 points from 11 games now, and you look at some of the fixtures you've got, you've probably got about four or five which you can target. But I think the key thing now is you've gone to Leicester away, for God's sake, and won. So if you're able to do that, that should give them so much confidence now that it doesn't really matter who you're playing or anything like that. You've got someone who, as I say, Cifuentes, perfect game plan. I think the players, to be fair to them, and by God, we've criticised them over the last 2 years, but they deserve a lot of credit. They executed that game plan absolutely fantastically. Discipline, all of the things that we hadn't seen, mental strength, all of the things that we commented they didn't have, they showed that. And if that doesn't give them an air of confidence going to the end of the season, nothing will. I mean, what is it now? 5 wins from 8? And I know that Sheffield Wednesday are flying down the bottom as well. But not all of those sides will get results forever. And we know from our performances, they're getting better and better. So I think from where I've been in the past, where I wasn't optimistic about staying up, I'm now in the sort of like more likely to stay up than not now.
Well, that's something. But we all are. I mean, it is bizarre because after we beat Bristol City, everyone was convinced we were going to throw it away against Rotherham, and we didn't. We gave it a bit of a go, to be fair, but hey-ho. But we've proved mental strength is definitely there. I mean, someone said today about the restart of Paul Smith, and I think that's been a massive positive for the team this season. I think he does make a difference, and he lifts the game when he comes on as well. But also, if you can see what the manager's done with Sinclair, what he's done with Jimmy Dunn, what he's done with Clark Salter, you're kind of thinking this is good. This is really good. We've actually got someone who knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
For once.
No, it's amazing. I think George made the point about the subs as well. But it's I think I do like Smith, but I think Smith at the moment at least is a better asset coming off the bench, especially with that pace. And I also think he's treated Armstrong the right way. When he came on, he's like a coil spring. I mean, you know, and that showed in the finish as well. He's like, and I thought Dykes, by the way, you know, I thought he had a really good game. As George said, he set up that first goal, was a clever run, just about stayed onside. But equally, I thought it was the right time for him to come off. And Armstrong came on. Well, yeah, we know the rest. I think, you could almost argue that, you know, Armstrong was almost too, you know, he'd listened too much about, you know, being a bit less gung-ho because, you know, obviously he had that one-on-one and chose to pass the chair instead of taking it on himself. But, you know, you can't, like I say, I'm not nitpicking. I'm just saying that maybe he would have a better chance of be taking it on himself. But, yeah, it's...
But then again, a few months ago, Chris, we were celebrating the throw-in.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? It's kind of our biggest gripe was, my God, the other team, like you said, they've got a corner. That's it. Game over. We're going to concede. And to think that he's come in and completely revitalized just even that one thing. Well, I'm not saying he's the second coming of Jerry Francis the first time, but it's good to see someone come in and make such a difference so fast, so quickly. Simon, now, if there was any criticisms on Saturday, you would be possibly the hardest person ever to please at a QPR away day, wouldn't you? I can't think of one single thing, apart from maybe the Begovic thing, but let's forget that. It was just perfect, wasn't it? The day was perfect, the fans are perfect, the game plan was perfect. It was amazing. It was us, that was.
Yeah, and it's what I said a few minutes ago, that it will be one that... Yeah, people look back on, you always get an away day or two a season where, yeah, you have that sort of pleasure of the eye was there when this happened. And that certainly is going to be one of them. And I think the point was made about positivity and the fact I'm happy to hold my hands up. I'm sometimes someone who's like, oh God, we got 2,000-3,000. I'm almost happy with my comfy 800 in an away end. But yeah, it was... From my experience where I was, it was everyone entirely positive, everyone getting behind the side. And it was very similar to what happened with Bristol City, where, again, 2,500 people. And, yes, it helps that we end up winning, but you could tell it's a pretty supportive atmosphere. And it comes back to what we've said about fans and so on this season have been absolutely incredible, considering everything that we've experienced over the last 2 years. For them to keep going, keep supporting the way they are, and actually coming in even bigger numbers is absolutely fantastic. And yeah, certainly we've got Begovic. I totally agree. I think he should have done much better with that free kick ball moving or not. But yeah, the only criticism for me on and Leicester's security was that's about the only thing.
You must have a criminal face, mate, because I was inside in about 10 seconds. Yeah,
but no one knew, you probably went in the wrong end.
Yeah.
No, it was, honestly, Chris, it was a nightmare, because what I couldn't understand, and this is me being a I guess, unreasonable. If you had a bottle of drink and your normal thing is you take the top off and you can take it in and, you know, you're not going to be silly. But you could buy the same bottle of drink 1 yard inside the turnstile, so with the top on it. So it's like, but if I just go through that door, I can buy the same drink with the same bottle hold. Are you mad? And yeah, I said to the bloke, God, is this your first ever football match? The security's mad, isn't it? And they didn't appreciate that, but it was true. It was like Reading. They always seem to be amazed that anyone turns up. Sorry, Chris, you're going to say something.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, I think the main reason for confiscating drink outside is because they can sell it to you at triple the price you get it from the shop, basically.
You don't say, Christopher.
But yeah, I don't think it's got anything to do with offensive weapons, but yeah.
My brain's an offensive weapon. I shouldn't be anywhere near a ground. Here's a question for you that someone put on Twitter today. I'd be interested to see. Just a quick one before we go on to West Brom and everything else. Allocate a seat at away games. Should it just be sit where you want, as long as you don't cause anyone an inconvenience? Because it seems to, after all that security, then everyone's trying to find their seats. It was a wee bit chaotic. Thoughts on that one? Start with you, Christopher.
Well, I wasn't in my seat, my allocated seat, and it was my daughter. We were in a completely different seat, but we by the time we got in there, it was quite late. And you know what away games are like? It's just everyone will gravitate to the back. That's where the singing starts from. I do have sympathy because obviously if you need to sit down, if you're old, if you're, you know, disabled in the sense you don't need a wheelchair, but you need to sit down. Yeah. Then I think that's, you know, that's perfectly reasonable that you don't want some 6 foot bloke standing in front of you, blocking your view. So from that aspect, I completely get it. But I guess in that instance, there should be, because as I say, it's that maybe supporters who are in need of a seat particularly there should be some sort of system so they're allocated the front, because as you know, it's normally the people at the back that stand up. But yeah, I can't remember the last time I went to an away game and sat in the seat I was supposed to sit in.
For days.
I'm not saying it's just how it happened, because you get there and someone's in your seat and it's just mental. And if you can see a seat that's free up, free further up, normal games it's not a problem. When you take 3,000, it's a little bit different, but we didn't have any problem. So I can definitely see people's point, but equally it's very difficult to manage.
George.
Well, I definitely see people's point. I'm very much someone as I don't want to sit in the seat I'm allocated, because sometimes the seats are right at the front and I hate it. But my dad, oh, he's like, oh no, you have to sit in your proper seat, and just annoys me sometimes. But I do think that when it's a sellout or something, like it just causes inconvenience if you're going to go sit in your wrong seat. And I get it. Some people want to go to the back, louder back there, and some people want to sit down at the front. But people, as you said, people are naturally going to gravitate to the back anyway. But I did just, as we're talking about fans, I just wanted to go on to the point before that the fans, obviously the atmosphere was incredible, but I actually didn't hear much moaning from the fans, which was really good to see, because at home to Rotherham, if I was to pick up another negative, it was the fans in the first 10 minutes. Like, listen, I get it. Playing out the football sometimes... Playing football out the back is sometimes risky, right? But they're going to do it either way. I love playing football out from the back, but when the crowd are constantly on their back, going way when they finally kick it long, like it's just not going to help them out, is it? And I had that especially at Bristol. So that's my little negative, but yeah, that's just my thing. But allocated seats, I think when it's a sellout, yeah, you probably should. But when you only bring like 800 and you've got 2,000 odd seats to choose from, you should be able to sit where you want.
Simon, I think I know your view on this, but crack on anyway.
You'd be surprised. There's two things to it. One, if the game's sold out, yes, I think it should be a case of an allocated seating. If it's not sold out to a certain level, it should be sit where you want. So again, Bristol City, we had a few hundred seats left over. So, yeah, we went relatively nice and quiet. We knew it was crammed right in that middle bit. So we came over to the side absolutely fine. Secondly, we're now at a stage where everyone pretty much stands up now anyway at away games. And that seems to have started from this last season. So that makes things a bit easier. But I want to pick up on what Chris said, and I think he's absolutely right. Why why you can pick your own seat for a home game and yet you can't pick your seat for an away game on the ticket, on online or anything like that, I genuinely don't know. So, I mean, I don't know how whether Ticketmaster or whether the box office can actually come up with a system where you can actually go, I want to sit in these sort of block. Other people might want to go, I want to go to that block towards the back. And then you're potentially avoiding that sort of chaos that we did have at Leicester, where we managed to get into our seats, but we saw loads and loads of people coming down and away just to go and sit together, which meant then that everyone was sort of stood up and blocked and weren't able to go anywhere. So I think going forward, if there's any way in which you can have a system where you can actually say, I want to sit here when it's an away game, going forward, I think that works, particularly at sellouts. But again, I totally agree with the notion that if it's not a sellout, I don't really see the problem of sit where you want.
Or even if you've got three blocks, like a sellout away game, you could probably have a block for people who don't want to stand, who can't stand, who are unable to stand, whatever, and have the club put them to one side. And yeah, you can pick which bit you want on allocated seating or seat it so you can see the game and you haven't got someone 6'2" in front of you. Yeah, maybe there's got to be a way that in the world's tech, we can put men in the moon and women on the moon. I'm sure we can do that sort of thing. It can't be that difficult. But I thought, like George, I was amazed because you're right. I think the thing about the goal kicks is just fear. I think from the Millwall match, we're still scarred from that memory of Millwall. And I guess that's why people were kind of, but you know, it's new to us as well, isn't it? Let's face it. I know we did it a wee bit on the Wolverton, but yeah, but they are mixing it up a lot more now as well. I mean, we are going long, we are going short. I mean, some of the balls that we're playing through the channels are really clever, actually. I noticed that Saturday. And I don't think Leicester were expecting that. We got behind them quite a lot and they didn't like that at all. I mean, that's why they were resulting to the most ridiculous of free kicks and fouls and everything else. And has to be said, I felt for the referee because he tried his best. He must have been devastated when he got home. He tried his best. And I was sitting there, I was talking to Alan and Cindy and Russ. I was going, he's going to give a penalty. I was just waiting for them to make one stupid break and the most innocuous challenge, and that would be it. And we didn't give, I think the players felt that as well, so they didn't give him the option. But he was down to give a penalty.
I couldn't believe it. I was on the way home in the car and I listened to the local BBC radio and they interviewed their manager and apparently their players were complaining about the refereeing status. Did you not see him surround the ref after the game for an apparent penalty?
Did he pass to them or something?
I don't know. It was literally 12-11 that game. I couldn't believe my ears when their manager and their players were complaining about it.
You serious?
Honestly, I'm not even listening to it. It was the most one-sided home ref I think I've ever seen. And every single their goal came from a free kick where Paul Smith just got in front of their man. It's simple as.
Hey, Chris, you look like you're going to come in.
Yeah, I was just looking for Clive made a comment on it because I read his usual excellent match report and I think he gave the referee a 4, but he was saying that it's only the second time he's refereed Leicester or something like that, and I mean he did look like he was almost like doe eyed because it's essentially a Premier League team. But I completely agree with that. It's
have you found it yet? Have you found it yet?
Yeah, he said. Obviously, he employed at this level for the last dozen years, and obviously destined never to go further. Refereeing stadiums like this in front of this crowd is not something that happens to Andy Davis very often. This is second Leicester game, first since 2013. Versus 19 with QPR, he looks completely enthralled to them. Yeah, that sums it up better than I could put. But that's it is difficult to judge when you're 100 yards away and you're like stuff that's going on in the other half. But yeah, you were just as you said, Paul, you were just waiting for him to blow his whistle and waiting for him to give something more than a free kick.
Just shocking.
Really bad. That's for another podcast, but it's about time these referees are held to account. There's just been so many, so noticeable, especially in the Championship. So many bad ones we've had this season. It's, I'm sure fans of every club, you know, say the same. It's not just us, but honestly, it's terrible. And he was particularly bad.
There was a bit of the lineup in the first 10 minutes, Simon, when we were. It was shocking, wasn't it? The seasons that linesman was making was just, I don't know, it would make Mr. Magoo blush.
To be fair to the linesman, he was the least of the problems that day. For me, it was entirely down to the ref, and it was, for me, just a sheer inconsistency of it all. And I think it was summed up, and George is absolutely right about the Paul Smith one. Ilias Chair had been fouled on the edge of the box not about 30 seconds before, and it was a foul and it wasn't given. And then exactly the same offence the other end. I think there was one with there was one with Jimmy Dunn, wasn't there, where Jimmy Dunn got fouled and all of a sudden we saw his hand out and he was pointing for a Leicester free kick. And, some absolutely bonkers decisions. And I'm like you, George. I was like looking at the end and Katie, my wife, was with me and she was going, why are they surrounding the ref?
Yeah, I know.
What are they surrounding the ref for? He's got with the exception of just putting a ball in the net for them, I don't know what more what more we could have done. I think there was another one towards the end as well where Sam Fieldnick got wiped out. I mean, that was a straight red.
Yeah, no, it jumped in.
Yeah, that was a straight red. And again, yes, he went back for the yellow card because he seems to think just because he gave us an advantage, that doesn't mean then it's a red card offence. But
that was bizarre, actually, Simon.
All day long, that was a red, that tackle on field.
That was bizarre, actually, because I was surprised. But there's also one that it came off one of their players and they got a goal kick, which was a new rule for me. Listen, he was shite. I mean, they're probably surrounding them because they wanted the money back, whatever they paid him.
The thing is, as well, I think it's a touch of arrogance. You know, we're Leicester City, we're a Premier League side, we shouldn't really be down here at all. We're clear in the league, you know.
Which was echoed by their chanting of, you're going down, we're going up, you're going down scenario.
Well,
I'm not convinced Leicester might stay there because
wobbly legs.
You think about the way they played that. They played it only one way, and it was basically we're just going to keep passing. There was no intent there to mix it up at all. And they've got a couple of tough away games coming up. Ipswich 3 behind. Leeds 5 behind and are absolutely tanking along. And Jesus Christ, that's going to be unbearable, that second last game with Leeds. That's for another pod. But that's getting quite a wobble now. And it is getting increasingly easy to read. And now we've given a blueprint for other sides. If you can be that disciplined, just block it, and then just be clinical when we were. I'm less certain about Leicester now than I would have been a few months ago.
I wish I could agree. Like, I do get your point. They do overpass. They do pass for the sake of it. It was a bit like Southampton. They're a bit like Southampton at the start of the season. But I just think with the quality they have in their squad, like that one of their centre backs costs more than our whole team combined, and it's just ridiculous. And another thing I heard on the radio, they were complaining about how many injuries they've got and how little quality they have in their
really?
Bench. No. Yeah. It's just, as you rightfully said, they think they're Leicester City, they're a Premier League team, they have a God-given right to win every game, in their opinion. And they hadn't lost at home for God knows how many games. And they hadn't lost for a while, and then they lost 3 on the bounce. So they just need to get over it. But I think with the quality they have, I think they will go up. It's just...
I'm not so sure, George. I'm not so sure. I'm a little bit 2 foot with Simon in this one. I think they're going to blow it.
I wish, but no, I just look at their squad and I think, no, they have to go out.
Yeah, but once you get these wobbles, George, they're hard to shake. The wobbles are hard. Yeah, what do you reckon?
I don't care. If we stay up, I'm more concerned about, on a selfish point of view, who do we not want to play next season? out of the ones that are going up. I mean, I would love it which to go up, because they haven't got one player that costs the way our total squad does. But Yeah, I just think like the at some point something's got to be done about the parachute payments, about the, you know,
I think they are adjusted it, Chris, the next couple of years. I'm not sure how, but they are. It'll be against clubs like us. We'll not benefit from it, but hey ho, we never do.
Yeah, but yeah,
they'll do something.
We did get it and we blew it, so we can't really.
You're right. We should be trusted anyway. Yeah, don't give us the money. We'll only spend it on Basingua. No. Don't give it to us. No, no, we don't deserve it. But no, we've done Leicester. We don't really need to talk about Rotherham really that much, except it was a game that we would have lost a few months ago, and we turned it around and won it very well in the end. And I'm happy with that. No, anyone watch West Brom on Friday?
No.
Good, no, good. No. Good, because then you can go into Wednesday's match absolutely ignorant, and that's Andy.
I've seen stats and highlights of it, so I can got a rough idea.
What you thinking, George? What you thinking?
I think first half they completely blew Coventry out of the water. They play from what I've seen, they play like one of the best teams in the division in that first half. But in the second half, I think they didn't play that great. They looked a bit lackluster, in my opinion, from what I've seen, because I've watched some of the extended highlights, and you know that says a lot. But no, I
was extended.
Yeah, exactly. 11 minutes of West Brom joy, isn't it? But
boing.
No, I think second half they didn't look too great. First half they look very good, and they got some new guy on for who they got in January called Mickey Johnston. I think it is. I think I saw he's got 5 goals already since joining in January. So that should be fun.
Simon.
First of all, I admire George for doing his research. Yeah. No, it's proper professional pundit. You know what? Fair play. Yeah, fair play.
Hoping for the call up from Sky Sports at one point, eh?
To be fair, you've done 11 minutes more research than half of their pundits do before the game. Fair play to you. It's going to be a tough game, I have to say. And yes, it's going to be emotional on Wednesday night with the stand tributes, and obviously it's around the same time as the 67 League Cup final as well. But I think for me, going into this week, if we can get 4 points out of West Brom and Middlesbrough, there's absolutely nothing to fear about Middlesbrough whatsoever. You get 4 points out of those 6 games, we're going to be in a decent spot.
You mean 6 points? 4 points out of 6 points, you mean?
4 not points 6 out games. Of 6, yes. Yeah, maths teacher. And what we're...
I can't believe I'm correcting you, but hey-ho, carry on.
You're correcting me on maths, Paul, Jesus.
Your life is over.
To be fair, West Brom are in a similar sort of situation management-wise. Corberan, with the squad that he's got, I think he's done an absolutely fantastic job there. I had West Brom, particularly with the takeover situation, I had them sort of mid-table potentially, struggling with FFP, but for him to do what he's done with them is a fantastic thing. And yeah, I think that's going to be another one. It's genuinely going to be a tough game, but with the results at Leicester, a draw ain't going to be a disaster. And again, that means then that you can aim for Middlesbrough, aim for Sunderland. They're perfectly winnable games. So we can get something out of them. We've got ourselves in a good stead, but yeah, I can see it being a tough one on Wednesday night.
Well, the thing is, though, they're probably having a similar conversation on the West Brom podcast right the second. You've seen QPR's last 3 games. You see they've won their last 3. They've beaten.
Yes.
They've seen off Leicester. They played a perfect game against Leicester. They were down against Rotherham, but they showed the balls to dig in and fight back and win that game. They won away at Bristol City before that. Their fourth win on the bounce there. So, I keep saying, because my daughter is saying, oh, look at that, we've got that car. I said, well, and look who they're playing. I said, look, it's like, all we've got to do is think about ourselves. And if we play like we've been playing the last few weeks, win, lose or draw against West Brom, then, you know, I think we'll go home relatively happy. I agree with you. I think 4 points from 2 games is more than good enough. We have got some. We looked at the results, and I looked at the games coming up. Leicester, I thought, well, obviously we're not going to win that. Just get that one out of the way. West Brom, I thought, well, maybe a draw at best. But I think this team's capable of anything. And if we stay fit, if the players stay fit, I'm sure Marty's got a plan already in place for West Brom, and if they execute as well as they did on Saturday, then we've got every chance. But at the moment, I would, if you offered a point, I'd say, yeah, that'll do nicely.
Yeah. Do you want to hear what I think?
No.
Okay, I'll tell you anyway. Rude. Anyways, I can find that mute button for you all, you know. I'm learning this trade. I don't know how to edit, but I can find a frigging mute button. No, I think you're right. I think we can beat anyone. I think the confidence is up, and why not? West Brom fared it badly against. I did actually watch the whole game. I did a lot more research than the future Sky Sports pundit, and I watched it, and I was a little bit scared, a little bit anxious, because obviously the Leicester match hadn't happened. And then the second half, I thought, oh, we could do this. And it's just sums up the championship. A decent game plan, a decent structure. Anyone can beat anyone. And that's exactly where we are. I'm not looking at anyone's games now and thinking, okay, they'll win this, they'll lose that. Just, there's no point. It's a championship. We've just got to, as Chris rightfully says, win your games, focus on yourself. I agree. 4 points from 6 points, I think, would be a great achievement and something to go forward from. 4 points from six games, I'd be a little concerned. Just saying. Right. Yeah. There's something I do have to discuss, because if we don't, we'll get accused of feeling very special. There was a meeting at Loftus Road last week to meet the new CEO. Myself and Simon went. I see on the social media, it's always a case of, oh God, you know, what are they asking for? Well, they won't give me a gold seat where I sit, which I'm very annoyed about. They won't do gluten-free pies, and they won't give me free cider. So I'm never going to another one. It's a complete waste of time. Yeah, it's a bit, if people think that people like Dave Thomas are good at meetings and stitch up our own fans, they don't know this club very well. It's just, listen, there's a few ideas gave to them about doing things, like I would say, like, why don't we take over the shops and the pub and whatever, make it more of a QPR area. Someone mentioned an anthem. They're only suggestions. They're not going to happen, probably. And it's just about his background. There's nothing secret. We don't feel we're special. If anything, anyone can set up a pod, a website, or write to the club, and I'm sure the club will accommodate them in some way in some kind of meetings, because it's not just podcasts. They do meet other people. But anything you want to add to that, Simon? Our specialness.
It was an interesting night, and yeah, I'm of the opinion that you've got to judge him by his actions. And look, he's made a decent start, don't get me wrong, with being able to create and get those four players when we thought we weren't going to be signing anyone. That was really good. But I think the thing that we take away from it is everyone has that sort of enthusiasm. Everyone talks, and don't get me wrong, he talked very well on the evening. But ultimately, I think we've been burned so many times, particularly over the last few years with what's gone on. And I think it's going to be one where it's going to be the actions and what happens over the next few months and beyond, and sort of like the long-term vision that he has. And certainly, I think in time, they'll be the sort of questions that we have of, how do you intend to get to this stage where we're a sustainable club? What are you going to intend to do? So that's going to be for another time. But yeah, as I say, he certainly spoke well, and yeah, listened, took on board concerns. But I certainly think in the future, it's going to be judge him on his actions, and I think that's all we can do.
One thing I can report back, we can say, because everyone says, oh, why are you not saying this or saying that? But some people will ask about a certain player, and it's possibly not good to talk about a certain player's mental health or anything like that, or on social media. But I think it'd be a step forward if there was some kind of notes came out from the meeting so people can see that we don't think we're special. We're just going and saying some things that anyone would say. But one thing he did say, which I will happily tell people, as he said, if he makes mistakes, he will own them. Now, that's a very on QPR thing to do, and a very on QPR thing to say. So, like you say, Simon, let's wait and see if he does, because there's been an awful lot of mistakes made at this club for the last 15, 16 years. And yeah, so that'd be good. But honestly, we're not special, and people need not worry. If there's anything that involved mergers, ground closure, ground moves, I'd be the first to leak it, and I would not hide behind confidentiality. And I wouldn't want to be invited. And if that was QPR, I wouldn't invite me to that meeting or half the people there, because we all care about the club. end of topic of that one. But I understand why people would say things. A lot of people I respect ask questions, and I respect them. But honestly, there's nothing untoward. But yes, I think in future, a report from the meeting, from the fans and the club.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we'd really help and help everyone. And yes, and no Gold State for me. No tour of Northern Ireland. Well, I'm not going to another meeting until they still sign it for £1.
You won't be surprised to hear he did genuinely ask that question.
I was taking the piss. But I did ask it if they could turn all around, you know. Just I'm happy to go to the South as well. I don't mind travelling too far, you know. Although saying that, Leipzig was amazing. I loved Leipzig. That was it. I love those little European tours because they're quite nice. Anyway. Pre-season ones, obviously, they have to wait a few seasons for a proper one when we win the league, the champ, you know, the FA Cup. Or would you still go to Europe if you win the FA Cup, lads? I mean,
yes.
I mean, yeah, excellent.
Yeah. I mean, that's the least of our worries with that, though, to be fair.
Dream high, dream big.
Getting beyond January in the FA Cup to begin with might be a bit more of a challenge.
I said dream high, dream big. Don't be stupid.
I am dreaming high by getting beyond January for the FA Cup.
Oh, we've been empty chaired by Chris. Oh, he's back. Hello, Chris. Right. We're going to do predictions.
I'm going to go shortly, fellas, I'm afraid.
Well, how about doing your hours end and predictions now, and then you can quietly walk away with nobody noticing because we're not on video.
Okay, that's fine. Okay, so ours end. Well, there's two. One was, which I found quite amusing, when the last pub before the ground we got to before the game, Leeds v Huddersfield was on, and we got there, and you know, after about, you know, Huddersfield were winning, and then when Leeds equalised, the whole pub goes up, and then there's chance of Leeds from QPR fans, which I never thought I'd hear, but there you go, it did happen. I was there, I didn't imagine it.
Okay, I didn't hear that in my pub, but okay.
Yeah, yeah. And the second thing is Stan Bowles. We touched on him earlier, Paul. You've done a pod which I'm really looking forward to listen to. Yeah, I mean, what can I say? He, you know, I am that old, unfortunately. But I, as a kid, I was in the playground with the team. We had a tennis ball. We played with it at lunchtime. I was Stan Bowles when I played with my mates. The old jumpers for goalposts, like outside. I mean, that was when you played. I don't know if they still do it now, but you had a player. You thought you were that. You know, you're almost commentating in your head. Yeah, I can feel like tearing me eye now, actually. I didn't think, but his autobiography, just on a cheery note, is that if you've never read it, it's probably the most entertaining autobiography I've ever read. I'm sure there's a bit at some point with Don Shanks and an ice cream van. I can't remember the full details, but there's some absolutely cracking stories. And there's a couple of quotes spring to mind. He got 5 caps, 1 goal for England, but so they said that if he could pass a betting shop as well as he could pass a ball, 100 caps for England. And the other one I think this is in the autobiography from his own mum, about his spending and about his debt. She said if Stanley invested in a funeral parlour, people would stop dying. And I think that's two absolute classic quotes about the man. But yeah, it's I did have the pleasure of meeting him a couple of times. And in fact, 2016, I went up. We organised. I organised to do a chat with him for the podcast, and he hadn't been diagnosed with Alzheimer's then. And I met him in the pub, and he turned up on the dock, you know, shirt and tie with his son-in-law, I think it was. And so I put the phone on record and said, "Oh, what was the best goal you ever scored?" And he goes, "Oh God, can't remember." And it sort of went a bit like that. And I was in the end, I was like, you know, because we had like 15, and there was getting some stuff out of him. After about 15, 20 minutes, I said, "Oh, let's stop this now." And so I ended up just him having a chat with him and a few pints for about an hour and a half, which was absolutely amazing. That will stay with me. And I must dig out my old phone because I thought it was disrespectful, you know. In fact, funny enough, I rang his daughter, and she rang me on the way back from the. So how was it? I said, "Oh, well, he was." There's a few things he didn't remember. She said, "Oh, it's funny with Dad. You know, you slip him 20 quid, and suddenly his memory comes back." So we had a laugh about it. And then it was only a few weeks later that they diagnosed, and it all sort of made sense.
I remember that, Chris. Actually, I do remember that.
So we didn't.
When you did it,
yeah. No, for that reason, we didn't kind of put it out. But maybe at some point I'll dig it out, and because now people know what his condition was, it will make more sense listening to him. But yeah, just an absolute gent of a man, an absolute magician of a player, and and an absolute card off the pitch. And yeah, just gave us, me, everybody else, even those, George, you must know the stories as well, even though you know you'd be way too young to see him play, but just an absolute legend, and he will be missed, and I'm sure he'll be given a proper send off on Wednesday. With that, I'll predict that it'll be 1-1. And many apologies, I've got to go, but family calls and all that. Good to see you, George.
Yeah, see you in a
Be on
bit.
Sky Sports in a couple of years. All right, take care.
See you, Chris.
See ya.
Cheers, Chris.
Well, thank God he's gone. Right. But well said about Stan. I mean, it was interesting because, you know, I said this, we did a special last night. I did meet Stan a couple of times with Tommy Collins and stuff, and he was larger than life, but not what you'd imagine, not what the press would imagine he was. He was actually quite articulate in what he said about the game, how his thoughts on the game, and he was generally a decent human being, and I don't think he could ever get over how much QPR fans loved him, even when he found out how many kids, dogs, rabbits, cats were named after him. I think he would always be quite surprised and humbled by it all. So, yeah, it is a, and I think the club, and this is the only thing I will say, did the right thing by him. And however they got there, wherever they started, it doesn't matter. He was able to come back while he was still with us and feel the love, even though he might not have been the Stan he once was mentally. I think he felt the love. We could give him a love, and I credit the club for doing that because we lose these people, and sometimes we don't get a chance to give them the love that we have for them. And I think he and his family know how much QPR fans love him, and we'll see that on Wednesday night. And Lough Flags have done him proud with the flag they've done, and the amazing people have done amazing things, and that is because Stan did amazing things for us, and he will be remembered and never forgotten. And that is what I've got to say about Stan. That will also be my odds end because I don't think there's anything else I could say that means as much to me as what I've just said about Stambouls. 3-1 Rangers.
Love it.
Simon.
Thank you. Yeah, that's going to be a tough one to follow. And just as I say, I never saw Stan play, but you can still tell when we drank in the White Horse, he was coming with Tommy Collins a good sort of 15, 20 years ago. And yeah, you could always see the affection, and even sort of older people I drank with at the time would always go up to him and they would offer their sort of affection to him. And yeah, you could see the smile on his face when, as you rightly said, he was genuinely proud that people loved him the way they did, and it was always good. Yeah, 1 o'clock on a Saturday coming round, and you'd almost guaranteed to see him there getting a drink. So obviously I didn't have the experience of seeing him play or anything like that, but I think for any QPR fan, from the ones who saw him play to the significantly younger ones, they'll always understand his significance. And going on to younger fans, I do want to mention Ted, who managed to see his first win in 11 months at a QPR game for Rotherham. And I did want to do a shout out. I've mentioned it a lot. The sort of he'd had 14 games, 2 draws, 12 defeats, and getting increasingly upset each time. So for him to actually come and see us live and actually win a game has been really good for him, so much so that he's coming with me to Sunderland next week.
Excellent. I am so pleased to hear that. Yeah, his short life, he's already suffered. You're a cruel man, Mr. Hall. You're a cruel man, but I love it. George, you can do your odds end, or you can talk about Stan, or do both and do a prediction. Oh, prediction, Simon.
1-1.
Fair enough. Take that. George.
Well, I'll do it all kind of together. Before I actually start on about Stan, I'll first talk about my original ask then was just going to be about the amazing support recently. Sold out home ground, Leicester away. Honestly, I've been to quite a few away games in my time, and that has genuinely made my top three, if not the best away experience I've ever had. It was so good. It's felt that over the last year or two, the club's kind of been divided amongst the fan base, and it felt like 3,000 of us just come together. And it leads me on to the standpoint of, obviously, I was a couple of generations behind watching him play, and my dad did. And I met him once in the club shop, and he was so accommodating. I must have been 6 or 7 years old, and I just it was so nice. I ended up having a 5 10 minute conversation with him. got a nice photo. He signed my book, which I've got so many legends in. And it was such great for me as well, because my dad always said to me he was Mr. QPR, the legend of QPR. So meeting him at the time felt massive and was massive. And second of all is I had a cat called Stan. Obviously, you mentioned it earlier, Paul. I had a cat called Stan. He's been there my whole life. Sadly, passed about a few months ago.
But, I'm sorry to hear that, mate.
Cheers. But yeah, it is really sad to hear. But yeah, Stan, my cat, was such a big thing in my life, and he always reminded me of Stan Bowles. Not obviously personality wise, but whenever he come up to me, I think of Stan Bowles, if that makes sense. So
yeah,
of
course it does.
That was really good. It's hard for me because I never actually saw him play. But obviously, as a representative of a younger QPR generation, I'm not calling any of you lot old, but we all do see him as a legend. And yeah, as my dad always said to me, Mr. QPR. So
Do you know what, George? That was actually a beautiful tribute, whether you're young or not. Well said, mate. That's really nice.
Cheers, Paul. Cheers, Paul. And prediction? Yeah, 0-0.
Oh, see, yeah, okay. All right, yeah. Wow, okay. I'm kind of feeling... Do you think I'm over-egging it?
I think you take the point, and then I think we aim at Middlesbrough.
Yeah, okay. Sky Sports, Wednesday night. Nah, 0-0. It's got 0-0 written all over.
No, it's on telly, isn't it? You forget about that. Okay, fair point. Well, here we've come to the end of the pod. Believe it or not, it's been nice. It's been a good little chat. I must admit, I prefer these podcasts to when we're sitting banging it, because sometimes I felt like I was dragging poor George in to give me hope for the future. And it's like, we're passing this misery on to you. I do apologise, and I felt like your father. But yeah, but you know what? Don't you live for the sometimes the bad days are horrible and they're horrible. Then when something like Saturday happens, where everyone comes together, you forgive a bit of it, because that was just beautiful Saturday. So George, Chris, as long longer here, he's gone, and Simon with the lovely windows. Thank you for this podcast, and thank you for what you said about Stan as well. And with that in mind, this podcast is dedicated to Stan Bowles, the king of Loftus Road, and love to, and support and best wishes to his family. We have lost a legend. You've lost a loved one. It can never compare. Thoughts and love to you, and hopefully you'll see how much he's loved on Wednesday from the QPR fans. This has been Open All Ours, and thank you for listening.